So beginning then, with our time having reached exactly 1 hour and a few seconds. In the stage of initiation, the energies of the signs and their attendant constellations come through in a purer form and a more direct line than upon the path of discipleship. So in general, what do we have? Less distortion, less refraction, bending, a more transparent transmission. In the earlier stages, it's not opaque, but it may be simply translucent, and we don't get a full representation of what is being transmitted. So the initiate is responsive to planetary, systemic, and certain cosmic influences, not all by any means. For instance, Sirius is considered a cosmic influence. I suppose Alcyone is also. Maybe the influences of the stars of the Great Bear are considered cosmic. However they reach the initiate, you know, through the sun and so forth, through planets and so forth. Anyway, they are cosmic, certain of them, but not all. So planetary and systemic and cosmic influences, certain of them, reach the initiate, and he becomes, if I might so express it, a lens through which the many lights, which our energy itself can stream and be focused on this planet. Well, he's definitely, obviously, a lesser lens. But the initiate is focusing many energies upon those he encounters and has to modulate them and be cautious, not release all possible energies in all situations, because they would do no good and they might do much harm. The initiate becomes a lens through which the many lights, which are energy itself, the many ray factors, planetary systemic factors, etc., can reach our planet. These energies, the initiate tunes to these energies, the initiate tunes his consciousness and thus becomes a planetary server. Very interesting idea. The planetary server arises because consciousness can be attuned to higher energies which must be used in service. So how often do we do this? Do we think, aha, this situation requires the energy of this ray, this planet, this zodiacal factor, and then do we attune our consciousness, pause, and release thought or word according to that attunement? It sounds a bit laborious, doesn't it? But I suppose we'll get better and better at that and be able to do that spontaneously rather than get caught in cycles of reactivity based upon our habit patterns. Okay. The other point which I might here touch is that certain of the rays express themselves through two planets. Well, this is just the tip of the iceberg here. For instance, the fourth ray of harmony through conflict reaches us both through the moon and through Mercury. But we really have been told that no radiation is coming from the moon whatsoever. It's really dead. Only some effluvious influence comes forth. So really, that fourth ray is coming to us through different planets, through Vulcan, first, to a certain extent, correlating with the fourth ray coming through Taurus, with a proposed sub-monadic ray of Vulcan being the fourth, and maybe through Neptune to some extent, with Neptune correlated with the Buddhic plane highly. So the moon is mysterious in that respect. It's not a transmitter at all. It's actually an emitter of unwholesome, disintegrative influences. But for practical purposes here, the moon is said to rule the or be ruled by or transmit the fourth ray, and perhaps a non-sacred planet, non-sacred fourth ray planet, is hiding behind the moon in some sense. So the fourth ray of harmony through conflict reaches us through the moon and Mercury, while the first ray of will and power reaches us through Vulcan and Pluto and through many other sources. But DK is confining the sources of transmission here. The first ray is probably reaching us in some respect through Mars, certainly through Saturn, we've been told, through Uranus with its first ray monad, though how effective the monadic ray of such a planet would be for us is debatable, and also Vulcan and Pluto. The real reason for this is one of the secrets of initiation, I suppose, and is hidden in the destiny of the fourth creative hierarchy, and in the will to manifest of the Lord of our Earth, who is himself upon the third ray of active intelligence. Now look at what it means when he says that. Yes, but he is more essentially upon the second ray of love, wisdom. Whoop, lower world. That won't do. Love, wisdom. And even more essentially upon the first ray of will and power. But you see, certain statements are made and they're allowed to stand. Actually, DK had not reached that section of the book where he had revealed the three rays ruling the three periodical vehicles of our planetary logos. So I suppose up to this point he hadn't even discussed the second ray soul of our planetary logos. So the reason, there's kind of a 7 and 5 operating here. 5 subsidiary planets. The fourth ray operating through the moon and Mercury, a non-sacred and a sacred. The fifth ray operating through Venus and what? Nothing that we know of at the moment. The sixth ray operating through Mars and Neptune, a non-sacred and a sacred. The seventh ray operating through Uranus and what? The first ray through Vulcan and Pluto, or Pluto and Vulcan, a non-sacred and a sacred. The second ray through the Sun and Jupiter, or a planet non-sacred veiled by the Sun and Jupiter. The third ray operating through Earth and Saturn. So these, we're caught in sort of a 7-5 situation here. 7 sacred and 5 non-sacred. One is kind of reminded of the piano and the 7, what, sacred white keys and the 5 non-sacred black keys. Sometimes these numbers are reversed. But our particular planetary logos has much of a non-sacred nature to redeem and is perhaps working on sacredizing the non-sacred expressions of these rays and elevating them towards a more sacred expression. Our Earth logos has a very busy agenda and much to redeem from the moon chain and the previous solar system. So perhaps that's why we have the 12 here. And upon our planet, we have to redeem the influences of the non-sacred planets and help them merge into the higher influences, which are also making themselves felt upon our planet. We have this issue of the 12 and the 14. 14 is an important number, but the 5th and 7th rays are left out. What will be the other planets within our solar system which will express the 5th and 7th rays? We have so many planets that it would seem to me that somehow and in some way the 5th and 7th rays expressed by Venus and Uranus respectively will find other planetary modes of expression, but these are not yet given. nor do we understand the perfect relationship between the 12 and the 14. The 12 definitely indicating a heart center activity, and the 14 representing two sets of sevens, which correspond to the Great Bear and the Little Bear, but also respond microcosmically to the seven centers within the head, superior centers, or maybe even above the head, and the seven more ordinary chakras. The 10, the 12, the 14, there's much to be said about those three numbers, as I suggested earlier. And I wonder if they correlate with sort of a 1, 2, and 3. The 10 correlating with the number 1, the 12 with the number 2, even though it sums to a 3, and the 14 somehow connected with the third aspect, active intelligence aspect. So anyway, why it is that the rays reach our planet, or why it is that the rays will express through a sacred and a non-sacred planet. We're talking about reaching us, so we are talking about our planet. Is hidden, is one of the secrets of initiation, and hidden in the destiny of the fourth grade of hierarchy, which is a redemptive hierarchy standing midway between very sacred lives and very non-sacred lives, and also in the will to manifest of the Lord of our Earth. And by that, do we mean the Lord of our planetary scheme, or the Lord of our Earth chain or globe? Anyway, we'll take it in a general sense. I don't think he means only the fourth ray and only the first ray. There are a number of different rays which manifest through two planets. So we have to create here a sacred planet which is highly redemptive in relation to the third aspect, which has gone before in an unsuccessful manner. The third aspect has manifested itself in our planet unsuccessfully. It seems to have manifested itself in a solar systemic manner unsuccessfully, as DK hints at some sort of rebellion in the previous solar system, which created perhaps certain failures. And we're told that evil, cosmic evil, has something to do with the misalignment of stars in the Great Bear, maybe involving the Pleiades, kind of a third aspect center as well. And when you look at the Great Bear, you seem to see that the third star, a third ray star, is out of alignment in the handle of the Dipper. So is there, even in our cosmic system, a misalignment between the third ray and the second ray? Anyway, we have a third ray planet in which the Christ principle of redemption, the second ray, is beginning actively to assert itself. And I suppose that the destiny of our humanity, which includes moonchain types as well as earthchain types for redemptive purposes, and of our planetary logos, which includes moonchain lives as well as earthchain lives in the fourth chain, has much to do with redeeming the third aspect. And when I think about why, with respect to ourselves, the rays operate through two types of planets, the idea of redemption comes to my mind. But of course, there's a solar systemic interpretation as well. Because I suppose, if we look at these non-sacred planets, except for the moon, they do apply to the whole solar system and are interactive with all planetary logoi in the entire solar system. So, you know, we're presented here with secrets of initiation. He doesn't tell us which, but it sounds pretty high. And when we're dealing with destiny, we're dealing with the monadic factor and high initiations. And in the will to manifest of our Lord, of the Lord of our earth. The will to manifest what? Something sacred and redeemed. So all of us have internally the need, microcosmically, to redeem the earth, Mars, Pluto, and the non-sacred fourth and second-rate planet, which are all part of our system, and maybe correlate with different chakras within our system that are not being too much accentuated, or which are relatively non-sacred chakras. Perhaps we have a task microcosmically to redeem these types of influences in our own nature if we are truly to manifest as a sacred human being. Many mysteries here. Okay. And of him who is the Lord of our earth, it is said that when the third great energy is related to the fourth grade of hierarchy, the mystery of the perfected seven will be understood. Well, in a way, the third great energy is the energy of the Holy Spirit, Brahma, Fohat, the third ray. It does seem to be related to the fourth grade of hierarchy in the sense that man is Manas, but we are certainly not expressing a perfected Manas by any means. So is it related or properly related to the fourth grade of hierarchy? The mystery of the perfected seven will be understood. It's almost as if we're adding the three above the four. The four of the fourth grade of hierarchy and the third grade energy somehow representing the number three, the three and four making a seven. We know that in some respects we are incomplete. And we are representatives of a fourfoldness, which has to become a sevenfoldness and eventually a tenfoldness. We know that the three, the third grade energy, is the dominant energy of the lower four of attribute, rays of attribute. The third grade energy is Saturnian. Saturn carries the plan and the purpose, but certainly the plan. Maybe Uranus more the purpose. And when the Saturnian energy is connected with our Earth, we have the possibility of an alignment with the plan and the alignment of the fourth grade hierarchy with the plan. The Saturnian energy, the third grade energy, is a three. And aligned or related to the fourth grade of hierarchy, it will be possible for that hierarchy to manifest the divine plan guided by Saturn. Now, Saturn in relation to our Earth is a mental planet, a mental center compared with a physical center. The Earth represents in the body of a great third ray entity. You kind of wonder, is the third grade energy the energy of the third ray, or is it even, does it have something to do with the third person of the solo-logoic trinity? So anyway, there's a one, the third grade energy is a single thing, but it's threefold, I suppose. It seems to mean the guidance of the of attribute by aspect. The perfected seven is not the completely perfected seven, it's a number of relative perfection. But it seems somehow to add to humanity the guiding power of a greater three, which have to do with aspect rather than attribute, and which have to do with a triad, a spiritual triad, rather than with the lower quaternary. So it seems to, in a way, crown the fourth creative hierarchy, maybe with the energies of the other three hierarchies. Interestingly, we're told that both Shiva and Vishnu are in Brahma. So when you add the third great energy of Brahma, you get Shiva and Vishnu as well. You get a trinity. Thus, the seven can be produced. Well, you see, this is pondering on the meaning of some of these really enigmatical statements, which will be the meaning of which will be revealed over the centuries, I think. Right now, we offer what the intuition might give us or what abstract speculation might give us. We propose, and then comes the communication regarding what was really the correct proposition. One of the more obvious, I guess there are several, one of the more obvious of the significances of this statement is to be found in the unfoldment of intelligence and love in the initiate. Now, when we have unfold intelligence and love, we are speaking very much of Venus, the union of love and knowledge, at which time of manifested expression, and at the last major initiation. So, it's to be found in the unfoldment of intelligence and love in the initiate, at which time of manifested expression, and at the last major initiation, last major, seventh, he will be responsive to the synthesis of energies which emanate from the seven spirits before the throne of God. And, okay, this suggests the seventh initiation, which is dual and solar and ruled by the dual second ray, and yet is supervised by the planetary logos as the Hierophant. He calls this an obvious one? Well, okay. One of the more obvious significances of this statement is to be found in the unfoldment of intelligence and love in the initiate. It's dual, at which time of manifested expression, and at the last major initiation, which if we begin major initiations at the third, and realize that the eighth and ninth are rarely taken within our planetary confines, he will be responsive to the synthesis, thinking about the synthetic ray of love wisdom, you know, the synthesis of love, wisdom, the synthetic ray. He will be responsive to the synthesis of energies which emanate from the seven spirits before the throne. So, the two and the seven come together. It's a second ray initiation. It involves the solar logos in a dual aspect. And the seven spirits before the throne in a seven spirits before the throne. Oh, see how I'm going to do this? Seven spirits before the throne. I'm going to do this, if I can just take an instructive moment. Seven spirits before the throne. Ah, I did it in capitals, so it did exist. So, the seven spirits before the throne. Come on now. Let's try this. Seven spirits before the throne. Try this. No. Good Lord. Seven spirits before the throne. Well, this is interesting. Seven spirits. Aha, SSBT, that's all. Seven spirits before the throne. There. Was that too tedious? Perhaps. This suggests the seventh initiation, which is dual and is solar. And perhaps a veils man of the seven sacred planets. The seven spirits before the throne are, in a way, the seven sacred planetary logoi before the solar logos. So he becomes responsive to the synthesis of the seven. And the two and seven are united, making a nine. It is, after all, the last of the major initiations usually associated with this planet. The planetary logos presides, as I said before, not Sanat Kumara at the fifth, fourth and third, not that unnamed existence, who is probably a still greater emanation of the planetary logos than is Sanat Kumara at the sixth, but the solar, but the planetary logos himself. So I do think that we are dealing with the seventh initiation. This is speculative, of course. When the third great energy is related to the fourth grade of hierarchy, the mystery of the perfected seven will be understood. So let's put that in here. The perfected seven are the seven spirits before the throne, presumably of the solar logos. Now, the third great energy is that of the third ray, of course. At the seventh initiation, we're having the second ray. I don't think we're talking about the sixth initiation, which is ruled by the third ray. So there's still a little ambiguity here. One of the more obvious significances of this statement is to be found in the unfoldment of intelligence and love. It's almost like, you know, let's call it love and wisdom, with wisdom being a sublimation of intelligence. It's kind of a second and third ray within the second ray, given at the seventh initiation. Interestingly, a Geminian initiation, which involves the second ray, and it is the third sign. At which time, of manifested expression, and at the last major initiation, he will be responsive to the synthesis of energies which emanate from the seven spirits before the throne of God. Now, there are planetarily seven spirits before the throne of the planetary logos, and I guess they are Kumaras. And there are seven spirits before the throne of the solar logos, and they are, I think, somehow the sacred planets of our solar system, possibly in alliance with some of the planets which carry the same ray. These are, these seven spirits before the throne of God are representatives, yes, of the seven rishis of the Great Bear. So this means, almost certainly, that the seven spirits before the throne are planetary logoi in this context. And their other pole, the seven sisters of the Pleiades, there are triangles, we are told, between the seven planetary logoi, I suppose the seven major ones with subsidiary planetary logoi associated with them, you know, the four and the four, the one and the one, the three and the three, the six and the six, the two and the two. And the other pole, so there are triangles, seven Pleiades, seven rishis, and seven planetary logoi. These are the representatives of the seven rishis of the Great Bear and their other pole, the seven sisters of the Pleiades, much connected with Virgo, interestingly, symbolically recognized, symbolically, and that's important, there must be some energy exchange, as the seven wives of the rishis of the Great Bear. Here again, in relation to our solar system, do we find another great triangle of energies of which the focal points on our Earth are the seven spirits before the throne in the planetary sense. because our seven spirits before the throne are somehow connected with the greater seven spirits, which are full planetary logoi before the throne of God, the solar logos. And with this triangle we shall later deal. I simply want to refer to it here. Notice how cosmic he seems to be getting. What he's discussing here might well be found within a treatise on cosmic fire. So when we go back to these seven spirits, the initiate at this high initiation may be responsive also to the seven planetary spirits. And I'll put that in. At this high initiation, I'll say, the initiate may also be responsive to the seven spirits before the throne in a planetary sense, the Kumaras, which Sanat Kumar is one and is responsive, therefore, to the planetary logos. He's on his own planet, as it were. But you kind of wonder if Sanat Kumara is somehow reflecting what ray? Fourth? First? What other sacred planet would he be the representative of? Is it Saturn, because the word is Sanat? These are intricate matters. Maybe if we were doing cosmic fire, we could go into them, and I think probably I did something of this nature when attempting to be more exacting by producing written commentaries for most of cosmic fire. I still have 100 pages to go. Hopefully I'll get to them, and maybe I'll have to do it verbally in this manner. So anyway, we have the Pleiades, seven. We have the Rishis of the Great Bear, seven. And we have seven spirits before the throne in two categories. One, the reflection, the lower reflection of the other. And DK is going on. I simply want to refer to it here. The seven spirits responsive to the seven sacred planets. So he's focusing here on the planetary seven spirits before the throne, who are also in the systemic sense seven spirits before the throne. They are expressions of divine life upon earth. So the divine lives of the Great Bear and Pleiades, and also of the seven sacred planets. Focal points for the lords of the seven rays, which are planetary. Rulers of the seven planes of consciousness and of manifestation, each of these Kumaras is, and so connected with Raja Deva lords, each of them connected with a Raja Deva lord. Representatives because, let us see, because responsive to the seven Rishis of the Great Bear, who are expressions of the life of the one about whom naught may be said. It is said the seven head centers within the one about whom naught may be said. The positive focal points for the seven major cosmic energies, which are, I suppose, higher correspondences of the seven rays, rulers of the seven creative hierarchies. So the seven rishis, now this is an important point, maybe something new for me. The seven rishis are rulers of the seven, I suppose, manifested creative hierarchies. We have, I think, the seven stars of the Great Bear connected with the Leo creative hierarchy, which is the first of the manifested creative hierarchies, and he's also, I think, connected with Vulcan. Vulcan rules microcosmically the head centers of man, seven of them, wherever they are, in the head or above the head. I sometimes wonder whether there's not three sets. Seven above the head, seven in the head, then seven in general, the lower seven, however we want to enumerate them. And related to positive, as positive poles to, he's giving us a lot of information here about the Rishis and the Pleiades, the seven sisters of the seven Pleiades, who are expressions of the dualism of manifestation in relation to the seven Rishis. So you have the masculine and feminine poles, providing the negative pole to the positive aspect of the seven Rishis, yes, and fuse with the positive energies of the Great Bear and unitedly work through seven of the zodiacal signs. This is intriguing. Working through only seven of the zodiacal signs. Which? Seven of the stars of the Great Bear, seven of the nine major Pleiades, working through seven of the zodiacal signs. Now, does he mean signs or constellations? Because if you think about it, these great beings may all be involved in the head center, the one about whom naught may be said, the seven stars or Rishis of the Great Bear, the seven major Pleiades out of a thousand, may be involved with the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, but then so are the zodiacal constellations, because they are the 12-fold major petal in the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. Maybe the Great Bear involves seven centers in the head of the one about whom naught may be said, or above the head. Getting the geography on that is important. There are different books on the subject. Eventually we'll have to see this for ourselves. And then the jewel box. You kind of wonder about the jewel box which the Pleiades provides, and whether that jewel box is somehow not the central jewel of the major head center within the thousand-petal lotus of the one about whom naught may be said. All of these seem head center related. But of course, one is mystified by the idea of seven. But the implication of seven zodiacal constellations is, is that seven of the zodiacal constellations are sacred and five are non-sacred. Well, we know that all of these beings are unequally developed. So could we choose seven through which the major ray working through a star in the Rishis, or one of the Pleiades, is working through a zodiacal constellation which expresses particularly that ray? Of course, we're limited by the idea of world periods. I mean, is it always so or only so during a certain world period? But he does tell us, at least at this time, that Aries expresses ray 1, that Virgo expresses ray 2, that, well, how should we look at this? Cancer expresses ray 3, and yet Capricorn expresses ray 3 for disciples. That Scorpio expresses ray 4. That, well, Leo first, but Aquarius soon, Aquarius expresses ray 5. We will express it soon. Sagittarius expresses ray 6. And that Capricorn at this time expresses ray 7. So, Does this mean that these are the particular constellations? Well, he called them signs, of course. We have to know whether he literally means that. But that these are the, let's call them constellations within the heart and the head center of the one about whom not to be said, which are correlated with the seven rays of the Rishis and of the seven Pleiades. So we would be leaving out Taurus, Gemini, Leo, although Leo is expressing a major fifth ray at this time, Aquarius taking over. Virgo's there. Libra we're leaving out. And Pisces. Did I miss something? Taurus is out. Gemini is out. Cancer is present. Leo is out. Virgo is present. Libra is out. And Pisces is out. And yet, cosmic decanates include Taurus, Scorpio, and Pisces. So, really important signs or constellations, Taurus and Pisces being left out, Scorpio being included. Well, this is a speculation. How do we know? The seven rays, which of the seven rays are connected with the various signs of the zodiac? How do we really know that? And I guess we don't. Here again, says the Tibetan wisely, the complexity of the forces playing upon our planet and increasing in their number and their potency, as the vehicles of response upon our planet become highly developed and sensitive, and even as our planetary logos becomes more highly developed and sensitive, and are therefore capable of a truer reaction and a more rapid response to the many forces impinging upon our planetary forms of life. So I guess there is maybe kind of bewildering complexity when it comes to the energies to which we as life forms upon our planet can be responsive, because our planet, becoming more sacred, becomes increasingly responsive. It has been remarked by a profound astrological expert who works with the Masters of the Great White Lodge. I wonder if he's even more advanced than the Masters, that when humanity comprehends the distinction between the signs and the constellations, understands the nature of the polarity of energies, and responds to the three cosmic realities, the 12 cosmic energies, and the seven planetary impacts, and the interplay of the 12 creative hierarchies, then and not till then will a radiant light be seen, and the destiny of our solar logos be finally determined. That's an extraordinary statement. So, it seems that humanity is involved with determining the destiny of our solar logos. Seems a little out of proportion, but our Earth is very important in the determining the destiny of our solar logos according to the initiations which seem to be enacted at this time through our planetary scheme. And humanity is very important in determining the destiny of our planetary logos. We could have the power to retard. So that's what a statement that is. Worth rereading. such a synthetic statement far in the future because our knowledge of astrology is so slim. Our knowledge of cosmic astrology, cosmic reality, so slim. But the different factors are being put together. When humanity comprehends the distinction between the signs and the constellations, DK has expressed that for us, signs as concentrated influences and constellations as galaxies and stars, understands the nature of the polarity of energies. Well, energies are related to each other in a polar sense. Certainly the signs of the zodiac are, the rays are, positive and negative, and maybe within each of the energies there are polarities of positive and negative, and even of neutral, the trinity within each, perhaps, and responds to the three cosmic realities, which presumably for us are the three major constellations, Great Bear, Pleiades, and Sirius, or sometimes perhaps substituting the Little Bear for Sirius. The three cosmic realities, the 12 cosmic energies, which I assume to be zodiacal, and the 7 planetary impacts, which I presume to be the impacts of the sacred planets and their rays, and the interplay of the 12 creative hierarchies, but I suppose especially 7, in terms of influencing humanity at this time. Then and not till then will a radiant light be seen and the destiny of our Soto Logos finally determined. Well, who will see that radiant light? Is this, in other words, is it humanity seeing the radiant light, or is this a solar systemic development for which humanity is very responsible? Seems our Earth is pivotal in the evolutionary process of our solar logos, and humanity, although, you know, spread out, I think, more than on this globe, is pivotal to the evolutionary progress of our planetary logos. So these are great eventualities. How we reach that, when we reach that, probably is not determined, though a desirable time of reaching is probably given. Behind this statement from this supreme or great astrological expert who maybe works with the masters of the great white lies, does that mean he is one of them, or that he, as a teacher, is working with them? This we don't know. Is it Master DK himself? Well, I don't know why he'd need to do that, because he says so much here. He could just say it. He seems to be quoting someone else. It's as if at the moment, the destiny of our solar logos, whether he takes the 4th cosmic initiation or the 5th in this solar system, is not entirely determined. Indications are there. But what will it be? Behind the statement are to be found 3 meanings. One for average intelligent man, another for disciples, and a 3rd one for initiates above the 3rd degree. So we can all interpret what we think it means and see where our interpretation might fit. I suppose Master DK has laid out enough knowledge here for us to begin to understand this synthetic relationship. We still don't have a practical understanding of these relationships, nor can we necessarily apply them in our individual and group lives. It's not until the 3rd degree that we can respond to the 3 great constellations, among which Sirius is considered 1. The 12 cosmic energies, is that another code name for the signs or constellations of the zodiac? Seems to be. all the great energy systems which DK has laid out are here. But their synthesis of interactivity, that is something that we can theoretically appreciate, but I don't think it makes a whole lot of practical sense to us given our stage, very early stage, of synthetic understanding. That's one thing DK really seems to be offering us, a great possibility of entering into synthetic understanding, something that he has in abundance. As I earlier pointed out to you, the sign Virgo is related to 9 constellations through the rulers of Virgo, right? And I went through that the last one of the recent programs. And in this fact lies both prophecy and guarantee. That which this sign veils and hides is potentially responsive to 9 streams of energy. Well, what is it that Virgo veils and hides? It is the Christ consciousness. CHC. I want to add that too. Might as well not wait to do things until later. CHC. Let's do it over here and see if it can be put in here. And we'll call it Christ consciousness. One runs into it so often that one should have a little code for it. That which this sign veils and hides, which is, I believe, the growing Christ consciousness or consciousness of the developed soul, is potentially responsive to 9 streams of energy, creative streams, whoops, aha, okay, there we go, which, playing upon the life within the form and evoking response from the soul, produces those points of crisis and those moments of demonstrated development to which we have referred in speaking of Leo, Libra, Capricorn. 3 major signs of crisis, or 3 signs of major crisis, although there are other crises offered in relation to a number of additional signs of the zodiac, as we've discovered on page 472 of this book. So, that which this sign veils or hides is potentially responsive to 9 streams of energy, potentially responsive, which, playing upon the life within the form and evoking response from the soul, produce those points of crises, we might say, wherein that which Virgo hides is tested out. And those moments of demonstrated development, because this is what a crisis is for, to demonstrate to oneself and to others and to the watching hierarchy that one has achieved a certain level of development, a certain stage within the overall development of the human being. So, the points of crisis of the individual, of the soul versus the personality, and of the emerging glorified soul in Capricorn, Capricorn holding the secret or mystery of the soul. Now we're going to look at some interesting connections via planetary rulers. Virgo is said to be a sign of detail. It's extremely rich. It's a long chapter, over 30 pages long, and we are dealing with many factors which we might wonder why. About which we might wonder why. Why are we dealing with them here? why deal with Leo, Libra, Capricorn here? Well, I suppose because the rulers of Virgo correlate with nine signs, including itself. And these nine signs, the nine has a relation to the three, in which the creative activity of the nine are tested out. If we could only remember where we've been and what we've done, but I suppose wisely we don't remember all that. What we are at the moment proves something of where we have been. But the evolutionary cycle is immensely long, at least in terms of the human conception, based upon, I suppose, the sense of the normal incarnation, its duration. Millions upon millions of years of development. Some of the incarnations not even worth remembering, says DK. Maybe not even traceable. I suspect traceable if enough effort were expended, but maybe it's not warranted. But when we get to review things under our own particular Bodhi tree, we will certainly see the main lives standing out and what they may have given us in terms of developmental factors. And then perhaps if we really know our esoteric astrology and rheology and psychology, we will be able to judge the importance of these incarnations and their energy contributants to the processes which we have come to recognize as developmental by studying rheology, astrology, and psychology. Should be quite illuminating, and hopefully we will have enough detachment to withstand it. Through Mercury, Virgo comes in close relation to three constellations. If you observe the way he changes the word signs and constellations, sometimes it's deliberate, and then we have to know when it is. Sometimes it's just a blinding process, and we have to know when that is the case. He might as well have said three signs here, but he said constellations. And that high master said that humanity has to know the difference between the signs and the constellations. I'm sure DK is purposefully mixing the use of these words at times. Here again is the triangle of energies of great importance in the life of the Christ child. I think we looked at Aries, Gemini, and Virgo a little while ago, talking about the relation of the pairs of opposites, beginning with Aries and treating the opposites as separate in Gemini, alternating and separate, and treating them as increasingly fused in Virgo. But with Aries, Gemini, and Scorpio, there's going to be a test to see which of the opposites prevails. Here again is the triangle of energies of great importance in the life of the Christ child, which Virgo guards and nourishes and hides. He repeats that formula. Guards, nourishes, and hides within herself a place of darkness where the Christ child can eventually be revealed. Well, this is the point, I think. So far, I'm holding my breath without any major collapse. Esoteric Astrology 86, Section B. Page what? Page 271, it seems. And beginning, Esoteric Astrology 86, C, page 271. Okay, so that's where we are.